Alex, what's going on, dude?
Not much. How you been?
I've been good. I've been good. Thanks for carving out some time out of dad
Yeah.
life to spend some time on the
Yeah.
podcast with me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to.
Congratulations. I know it's been, a few months, what, 4 or 5 months or so since you've had
Yeah,
one.
five
How's that been?
months. It's been the first few the first week was just like a whirlwind, you know. It's like, so Maddie, my wife, had some like she had preeclampsia, and so like there were some issues kind of around with that. And then and so that first week was like kind of insane. But then once we got her to a healthy spot and got her home and got the baby home, it's like I think every single parent on the planet experiences the situation of you bring the car seat with the baby in to the house and it's just quiet all of a sudden. And it's like, what now? Like, okay, we've read the books, we know like generally what to do, but like, oh my God, now we have to take care of this human. Like we've done it with It's weird. It's a weird comparison, but like kind of similar. Like we've done it with two dogs. You know, you bring a new puppy home and it's all of a sudden like, wow, okay, you're with us now. You live with us now. But then like, I mean, it's obviously very different because it's a human versus a dog, but like 9 months of pregnancy led up to this big moment and it's just like building and building and building. And then you have this one moment of birth, which ends up potentially being hours long, you know, or multiple days long, in our case. And then it's, so it was cool. It's been cool, you know. That first week was crazy, and then since then, it's just like I feel like we've gotten in a really good routine. My wife, Maddie, works with me on my business, and so you know, I've kind of encouraged her to take a little bit of a step back. She's very driven, and so she doesn't want to necessarily, but I've tried to, you know, not enforce that, but just encourage that. But other than that, you know, it's been great. Like I just last night I was feeling, and this morning I was feeling so grateful that like, I don't know, just the life that I have. Like my wife and I are home with our baby Monday morning, and Sunday evening, you know, both. Like I don't have shift work, I don't have to go into an office. Like, yeah, I have to do work from home, but I'm just sitting here with my baby, my dogs, my wife, and life is good. So the last 5 months, it's been like my mindset toward all of it. It's just like I'm feeling very grateful.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I agree too. I feel like nothing can actually prepare you for that. Like there's maybe some similarities for sure. Like we have a dog as well. And like your world changes when you start taking care of a dog or you had a puppy, you get two, and you add a baby on top of that. It's like, damn, there's a lot going on, but nothing actually prepares you for that. But I'm happy everything went well. Preeclampsia is no fucking joke, dude. Like,
No, it was pretty brutal.
was it and adding that on top of an already stressful experience and an uncertain experience and just this mystery of like what is childbirth? You've never been through it before, right? Having your first child, but like with the preeclampsia, was the baby born around its due date or was there
Right,
a lot
basically
of
right
stuff?
on.
Okay.
Yeah, within I think she was due. I think she went 1 day late. I'm pretty sure it was 1 day late. So he was born on the 13th, July 13th, and I think her due date was July 12th. And actually my sister was she was also pregnant and she gave birth like 23 hours and like 52 minutes before. So we have cousins that are within 1 day of each other, within a 24-hour span of each other, which is pretty crazy because she has two kids already. This is her third child. And then so everybody kind of expected her to either go on time or early, and she ended up going like later. And then Maddie went maybe she went a day early. She went a day early. That's right. It was seven. It was his due date was 7:14, and he came 7:13. So, yeah. So it was luckily it wasn't like a situation where, you know, we had to panic, you know, too bad. But we went in for a routine checkup or something like that. Her blood pressure was a little high, and we were checking it, and because her feet were pretty swollen, so we were checking that. And so we went in, and they were like, "You need to go to the emergency room right now." And we were like, "Wait, what?" What? We're not expecting that at all. And checked in, and then we were just sitting there being monitored, and 2 days later, a day or two later, I don't remember, it's all a blur at this point. Yeah, she had the baby, and then it was good for a minute, and then we had to go back at a certain point, and that was not that tight because on the hospital bed they put up the foam pads for like if you have a seizure, by the way, if you have a seizure. And so it's like, oh God, this is getting heavy quick, you know, but
Depends.
all good now, 100% healthy now.
Yeah, and I'm happy Maddie's okay. I feel like, yeah, I mean, from a mother standpoint too, like it's scary as hell, but
Oh yeah.
happy everything has worked out and 5 months removed now. You can kind of look back on that story.
Yeah,
Yeah.
all good.
We can
All
smile
good.
about it now, which is good.
Right.
Well, good, dude.
Definitely.
Thank you for all that. It's always fun, just like just because my wife and I were, trying and thinking about what life will be like with a kid when we have him or her one day. And I think that the more I talk to people, the more people who have kids who I get to interact with, it's always fun to just kind of talk about that kind of stuff because it's not things that you are ever interested in until it actually pertains to your life, So like having a ton of guests on, other dietitians, people who have been in like the prenatal space, the postnatal, like feeding infants, like how to feed little adolescents, kids. Like it's been really fun for me because I know that's hopefully going to be the, future of our life here relatively soon. And hearing your experience, it's like, yeah, you hear more of those experiences than you hear, oh, our birth was perfect and nothing happened
Perfect,
and it was all
exactly
right
like I
on
thought it
time
would
and there's a
go.
2-hour delivery. It's like it almost helps manage your expectations for other parents going through that on their own,
If slash when you have kids or you're not, a kid, do you think you'll find out the gender beforehand?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's something that we can't even conceptualize, like the patience or the will it would take to not look at what,
Yeah.
what the blood test says gender wise or whatever else is going on. So did you guys know?
No, we just
No.
we did we didn't. Yeah, my whole family's decided to do that, and so we were like, yeah, might as well. We always enjoyed not knowing, and then like the surprise of, getting that text or getting a call, like it's a boy, it's a girl. So we didn't find out, and we actually had strong hunches that it was a girl. So then, when the baby comes out and I see and I announce it, I'm just like stunned. I'm like, the doctor's like, go ahead, dad, announce it. And, Maddie can't really see, right? And I said, it's our boy. It's a boy. And it was just like, holy sh, a very overwhelming moment, of course.
What a special moment too, man. That's insane, man. You and I are very different men for those reasons. But how cool, nevertheless, to just be able to find out on the spot and especially everything leading up to the birth, man.
Oh,
It's like
yeah.
having that kind of overtake everything
For
else that
sure.
we're dealing with at the time. I felt like it made it worth it for sure. I love it, dude. Well, good. I'm enough about baby talk, but I feel like that's something that is so fun to talk about. And I know a lot of people who listen to the show and people in general, like they will have a kid one day, most likely, or maybe they know kids, or maybe they've already had a kid or multiple kids. So I feel like it's stuff that everybody can relate to. And it's something that I'm realizing that doesn't get old for people. Like when they have a kid and they have that shared
Yeah.
experience with people, it's like it's
Right.
almost similar to like weight loss. You have somebody
Yeah.
who's lost 100 pounds and they meet someone else who's lost 40 pounds. And it's like this instant connection. But parenthood is like to the 10th degree of that
For
because
sure.
there's so much, uniqueness that comes with that. But yeah, I find it's just a fun and very fascinating subject because it's all different for everybody else too, even though there's still a lot of similarities and like textbook, a lot of things happen, along the timeline of like conception and birth and how they raise kids. But obviously we all know there's differences on how that all plays out. But I'm excited to not necessarily talk about all pregnancy stuff today. This is going to be very different conversation,
Yeah.
more so about, body recomposition, lifting, just all the fun stuff that when I saw your page for the first time, I try to remember because it was probably within the last 9 months or so that I maybe started following. I'm having a hard time remembering how I came across your page. Maybe it was on my feed or maybe Jordan Lips reposted one of your posts or something like that. But I since I followed you, and this is a long drawn out way of why I wanted you to come on the show, but since I followed you, I've found that like a lot of your messaging is stuff, and when I read it, it's like I just I'm nodding my head along, right? It's maybe not something I would say exactly to the T that you said it, but it's like that sounds like some shit that I would say, or that sounds like some stuff that I've come to think, or that I've come to approach this way of health, fitness, body transformation stuff, everything else going on. And I really appreciate that because in a world of social media where you see so many different messages, and it's not that I'm like trying to create this own echo chamber of like, the way that I think is the way everyone should think. But people like you and people like the Jordan Lipses out there and people like that, like it's almost like they're becoming a little bit more scarce, or there's just not as many that at least I'm exposed to compared to the infinite amount of accounts that are maybe saying things that we're defending or we're myth busting or we're talking with clients about on our one-on-one calls of why that might not be true or applicable or actually relevant to the person it's themselves. So since I've been following, I've really enjoyed that. And When it comes to like having guests on the show, like I don't have a tight inclusion criteria, but it's like usually are they smarter than me, or are they have a different area of expertise, or are they saying similar things to me, but we say things differently and we could talk about topics together. You met like three, four, five pieces of criteria where it's like, I
I
got to get this
appreciate
dude
it.
on the show. So I really appreciate your content. I know the discussion today is going to be really fun. But before we jump into anything, just do your little intro, your little podcast journey, I guess you could say, and we can kind of go from there. But selfishly, I don't know a ton about you. So I'm curious to know too, just about how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so let's see, how far back do I want to go? All right, so growing up, I played soccer and my parents own a business. These are just kind of like random things that'll come back into play at some point. So playing soccer, as opposed to playing something like football, football obviously encourages weightlifting. Soccer, you're fast, you have ball skills, but it doesn't really matter if you're big or, strong. It might help, but anyway. So growing up, I was always kind of like sort of more of the nerdy, archetype in terms of children. Very much into video games, still am. But I didn't love, and I have severe food allergies, and so this kind of high energy expenditure with soccer, not weightlifting, food allergies, so I'm not eating as much as other kids probably, made it so that I was pretty skinny growing up. And I think like, this isn't necessarily abnormal. It's not like I'm a freak of nature, one in 100 kind of case. This is a relatively common stereotype, I guess I could say, for children growing up. And I didn't want to be that once I got into high school and college, especially like late high school and early college. Started making friends with some football players. They were like, "Hey, you get in the gym with me." And I was pretty scared, if I'm being honest. And one of my buddies who's big, he was like, "If anybody laughs at you, I will actually punch them in the face." And I mean, he was being dead serious too. Like he's an intense guy. Luckily nobody's faces were punched. Nobody laughed. Everybody, I think that, and that's indicative of the attitude in the gym that I experienced the most, is like people don't give a shit in a negative way. People care that you're there. People care that you're showing up. People care that you're putting an effort. And I think that is the most common thing in the gym. So, freshman year of college, I didn't have them to support me anymore in like the weight room, didn't have them to guide me anymore, had no idea what to do. Heard Manny Pacquiao was doing 1,000 push-ups a day, and I was like, I bet I could do 500 a day. If he's doing 1,000, I could do 500. So I committed to that for basically an entire year. I did 500 push-ups every day, and I didn't know training to failure at the time. This was in 2012, but I would just take sets to failure. So I'd be doing like 20, 30, 40 push-ups, go to failure, mark it down, and then do another set. And I'd break it across, an entire day. But yeah, so anyway, started doing that. And then, it was 2013, 2014, started to really get into the gym. And this is kind of what'll align with personal experience as we talk about later in this episode. I like wasn't really paying attention to my diet. I was just lifting, and I got crazy muscle growth, because it's like crazy, relatively arbitrary. I'm 165 right now. Like I'm not like hulking out 220, 250 or anything like that. But yeah. So anyway, worked at my parents' company for a bit, and then did medical device sales. This is post college. Graduated, didn't do anything with fitness or nutrition. Like, that's not what I went to school for. I went to school for, majored in communications, minored in marketing, took a few kinesiology classes because I thought that'd be interesting. And one guy was like, "Dude, I see you in every one of my classes. Like, why aren't you like majoring in this?" And I was like, I'm really close to graduating. It's my fourth, fifth year. Like, it took 5 years to graduate because I switched schools and switched majors a bunch of times. And, anyways, yeah, graduated, worked for my parents for a bit. Did medical device sales for a multi-billion dollar company out in California. Did it in Michigan. I was not remote, but I like handled doctors in the area. And then in 2020, I was like, we were all just kind of locked down, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do for like my long-term career because other stuff just wasn't, it wasn't a perfect personality fit. Like with the medical device sales and stuff, I just had to drive around a lot. I didn't love it. So 2020, I'm sitting at home and I was like, I see other coaches like Jordan Lips online. And I'm like, wait, you can do this from home? hold up, because I was doing group fitness at a local gym, and I had done that over the years, you know. So that was kind of my brief introduction to fitness. I was doing group fitness, and a few friends over the years, maybe 2017, 2014, 15, 16, 17, a few friends were like, "Hey, can you coach me?" And I was like, "You can come work out in my basement, and if you want to make it a structured thing, give me $20." And there's one guy in particular, Jacob, who was like, "Okay." So 3 times a week, he gave me $20. I, you know, trained him. It was cool. And anyway, helped him with like the, you know, very low level nutrition stuff, calories, macronutrients, got him lifting. And yeah, 2020 started in August of, or July of 2020. I got NASM or NASM certified. I don't know. People use both. I guess it's NASM, but I've never called them NASM, NASM. And I no disrespect to those who have that certification, but it is a load of shit. I'm so sorry. It's just there's so much stuff that I had to basically unlearn on that. And again, no disrespect. But you know, it got my foot in the door. It got me a little bit more confident in myself. And then I started coaching people online in 2020. I think I made $600 from August to December coaching clients, either for free or for like 50 or $100 a month. In 2021, I think that's when I really started to ramp it up. Obviously, it was my first full calendar year. I got sponsored. I did like a sponsorship with Strong App. I got sponsored by MyProtein. Started growing social media a little bit, just posting really consistently, working with people, either for free or paid, just anything to get a testimonial and market it. 2022 was my first, you know, not to go on the numbers too much, but 2022 was my first six-figure year on coaching, one-on-one coaching. And then late 2022, I was like, I want to turn this up a notch. And I started thinking about how can I do different collaborations with people. And late 2022, it was like 5 days before Christmas, I reached out. I guess I should back up a little. It doesn't really matter. I reached out to Danielle, the dietitian. We had kind of had this internet connection going, and she has 500,000 followers on Instagram. Reached out to her. I was like, "Hey, I see people in your comments asking for fitness programs, and you don't offer one." And she's like, "Nope." And I was like, "Do you want to entertain the thought of us working together? Me offer a fitness program. We do it together, and we split the revenue." And she's like, "Let's hop on a call." And so we did it. We started building different programs. We built a group training program, and then we built this one-on-one coaching program. And then we decided to shut that down and retweak it to be a more scalable offer, which is now Forward Forever. And we've worked with over 2,000 people now in since late, you know, August of 2023 is when we launched that. And so since then, yeah, a little over about a year and a half now, we've worked with over 2,000 people, and you know, it's a continuing group membership type thing. So, that's been a core offer. On top of that, I have one-on-one coaching. I have a group training program. Yep, I have Forward Forever, which is training and nutrition. And now I'm building a software because I want to help coaches on this end of things. I want to help them get to six figures and beyond. And one of the things that I think coaches struggle with personally is education, hosting, like helping their clients learn what they know. I think the transfer of education can be a little spotty here and there, and coaches just don't have a lot of great options. You know, you could use Kajabi, but it's super expensive and not tailored for coaches. And I also think the check-in process can be a little clunky for some clients and coaches. I think it's hard to reference previous check-ins specifically if a client says like, "Oh, you know, what did we talk about 6 months ago?" And I think it's hard for clients and coaches to visualize progress in a way that makes them feel clients helps clients feel like they're doing well, you know? And so we're putting all these tools together, we're putting all this education hosting together into a platform called Pivot that'll be launching in first quarter of 2025, if not early second quarter. So that's been a big project I'm working with a developer on, and just really excited for that. So anyway, that was a long version, but that's everything.
Super helpful. Super helpful. And got a lot going on, especially with a little newborn at home. But
Yeah.
there's something about having a kid, I'd imagine, that makes you even more motivated, right? To make things work and to keep them where they're at, you know? So it's kind of cool. When I was listening to everything you were saying, it's like when we look at like the typical route of people in the fitness space, like I think the typical route for a lot of people is like, yeah, people play sports like you did. Maybe they go to school and they Do the exercise phys, kind of route, or they do the nutrition sciences, or they do the biology, like they do something with like nutrition or fitness related. And then that transitions them into, maybe they're trainers and they did that on the side and that's what got them through college. And then they just kind of build a business like that. But I also see the route that you've done, like weirdly a lot as well, where it's like into sports, you mentioned some food allergy stuff, just like have had your own experience with nutrition, got out of high school, did a business, something completely different, but then made your way back into the space or started to create your own, space in the fitness industry and nutrition industry, and like have built a very successful business because of that too. And I feel like it's very interesting to see how people get there, but there's always one connection of like they have their own shared or learned experience, and there's a need for them to try and help people maybe that are struggling with that or are the coach that they wish that they had at one point early on in their lives. And I feel like I see that play out with you. The food allergy stuff is interesting to me because I've heard that on your Instagram before, but it's like pretty serious food allergies, right? It's not just like you're allergic to peanuts or something, right?
There's a good list of like 50, 60 different food allergies. Some are life-threatening, like anaphylaxis level, where I'll just like, that'll be the end of me. I mean, I have EpiPens and stuff like that, but like, you don't want to have to use those.
And this isn't like a you just ordered a Everly Well, fucking food allergy panel, and you're like,
No.
oh, I have some
Right.
markers for gluten and soy and dairy. It's like,
Yeah.
like you actually have,
This has
reaction.
been since I was like 3 years old and been hospitalized many, many, many times.
For
And
sure.
yeah,
Yeah, for
the whole
sure.
gamut.
I love that, dude. And when you said like when you got into training for the first time, because I think this is something that maybe some people can kind of relate to in a sense where it's like, the nutrition, the things that they've been doing, or the stuff that they've learned from their parents, or the stuff they've figured out on their own, or in your situation where it's like, hey, I have to learn how to live with these food allergies and kind of acclimate to that. And at some point, you get through the learning phase and you're in the implementation phase, and there's not a lot that changes. But when you added something like lifting, for example, that's when you saw maybe a lot of things change, or things actually change that were a little bit more meaningful than just doing the nutrition thing. And I wrote something down when you said you weren't paying much attention to your diet. You were just focusing in, but you had paid attention to your diet at least, or at least had to have some, exploration and trial and error to get you to a point where you felt comfortable that you could take on this thing and only focus on that more than the nutrition side of things. Is that right?
Yeah, and I was reading labels before it was cool, before the shirtless dudes in the grocery stores were telling us that you have to read the labels, fear-mongering around different ingredients. I was reading them for like may contain traces of walnuts or something like that. But even then, I mean, I was in like 2013, I would say. I didn't understand calories in, calories out. I didn't have any kind of nutritional background in that sense. And so, and I was just thin. I was just so thin. And so I was like, how do I gain weight? I mean, it was literally like, it was a mystery to me. And so I bought this mass gainer, and it's like, oh, this just has a lot of calories. So just throw this in. Because I'm somebody who, a lot of people have the issue of they're always hungry, right? I had the opposite issue, which I think other people struggle with, where you're like not hungry. And if you don't intentionally eat, you're going to skip meals and you're going to be way, you're going to be eating on the low end of your maintenance or potentially even into a deficit. So I was always really, really, really lean. It was a struggle for me to gain weight. And now, I mean, now it's no problem. I can gain or lose weight at the drop of a hat.
For sure, for sure. And I think, genetically, yeah, maybe your baseline, hunger satiety signaling is very different from other people. But
For sure.
for people with food allergies, food sensitivities, it's like I don't blame people for not wanting to eat sometimes, or for being
Yeah.
afraid
Oh,
to
yeah.
eat, or for not feeling like they can gain weight, because there is so many considerations that go into every single meal that they create for themselves, or every time they're in a social situation, it's like their default setting is eat nothing at all because they don't know
That's
what's going
exactly
on.
it.
You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
versus like other people where it's like, oh, you have no restrictions and you go to a party and you drink all the drinks, you have all the apps, you have the meal, you get dessert, you hit In-N-Out on the way home. Like there's just always something happening, right? And so
Right.
the fear around food, or just like the food aversion that I feel like I've seen with people who in your position where it's like, yeah, once you learn how to get around that and navigate around that, and then you can start adding after that. But there's still that, like, I got to figure my shit out phase because I'm scared to eat. So I feel like I've noticed that too, where there's that kind of spectrum of like, yeah, there's a starting point where it's like you're really lean and it's really hard to gain weight, but now you're at a spot where you know a lot about your body and you know what works and you know what you can do. And now that you're here, it's like you have the privilege of being able to gain or lose weight or actually be in a spot where you understand how things work and what you need to do to change those inputs to get what you want.
For sure.
And
We'll
that
see how that changes in the next there's a medication called Xolair that I got approved for,
Okay.
and it's like a new medication. I haven't used it yet. Might start it next month, but
An allergy medication or what?
yeah, so it was originally for people with severe asthma, which I have pretty intense asthma too, but it's like a monoclonal. I don't understand medicine that well, just full disclosure, but it's a monoclonal antibody medication injection that I have to take like, I don't know, 1 to 2, maybe 3 times per month. And it's supposed to reduce my reaction severity to such a high degree that I may be able to reintroduce a lot of the foods that I'm allergic to. So, like chicken, turkey, those things might be back on the menu for me, which if I could have turkey back, ooh, that'd be great. Because my saturated fat intake is a little bit on the high end for somebody who, I need to get my protein in. And so, I try to keep it minimal, but like, and my cholesterol's in a good spot right now, but I don't want this to come bite me in the ass like 30, 40 years down the road. So, anyway, there's a lot of food allergies. So, I'll be starting that probably in January. So, I'm pretty excited. Looking forward to that.
Nice. Good luck to
We'll
you.
see if I blow up, because then maybe
Yeah.
I am going to In-N-Out. Maybe I am going to the parties and eating all the food. We'll see. If I gain 100 pounds, this is the reason.
Slippery slope. I know you'll be documenting every step of the way,
Yeah.
which
Oh, yeah.
and I was like coming up with topics for what I wanted to talk with you about. And I feel like we're right now, as we sit here and record this, in a time of the year that is very unique in the fact that we're in the holidays, it's middle December, New Year's is coming up. Year's resolutions are usually a thought in a lot of people's minds, especially as it pertains to health and their fitness and stuff that they want to accomplish for the year. And I think, you mentioned how you were a hard gainer, someone that had a hard time gaining weight, and now it's a little bit easier now that you know what's going on. But usually, I'm making assumptions here, but in my experience and what we see online a lot, and just the health of our country, like, the opposite is kind of the goal for a lot of people. Like, not a lot
Oh,
of people
yeah.
trying to sit here and gain weight,
No,
going
I would say I'm in the
into
minority
January.
here.
You know what I mean? And I know a lot of people can sit here and nod along with that as well. And I think, given the season that we're in, and again, this conversation is going to pertain whether it's June 22nd right now and you're listening to this, or if it's like January 1st. But in light of like New Year's resolutions, and I'm not sure your thoughts around them, but I think it can be a good start. Again, there's obviously a lot of context and caveats we need to add as we're dealing with somebody who wants to set New Year's resolutions and what they're going to go for and what trade-offs are willing to make. Like, there's all that good stuff. But I think January could be an amazing time for people to refocus and recalibrate their efforts and really double down on the things that they want to do. And weight loss is usually that part of the conversation for a lot of people. And I'm not going to sit here and say that you shouldn't go for that, but part of the thing I want to talk about today is this whole idea of like body recomposition and what it is and how that could be a goal or an option for people who are sitting here and it's like, yeah, you know what? Like, weight loss would be cool, but at the end of the day, it's like I also want to look better, and like maybe weight loss isn't the only thing that's going to get me to where I want to be. And I think that is a huge conversation that people need to understand so we can kind of differentiate like what might be more pertinent. Because, man, somebody might be here at 350 pounds and they might need to lose 100 pounds, right, to be, better metabolic health, improve a lot of their blood markers, build more confidence, like get to a place where they actually feel good and get to a place where they, are enjoying the body that they're living in. But there's also an end of the spectrum of people where it's like, yeah, they want to lose 5 to 10 pounds, or they think that 5 to 10 pounds is going to be the thing that makes their progress or makes them really happy, when maybe there's a missed opportunity or that's not the actual outcome that might get them to where they're happy, So we're going to maybe speak more to the people on the latter, right? Where it's like, hey, maybe you have between 5 and 20 pounds, potentially a little bit more that you could lose. And not only focusing on weight loss, I think, is hard for people to conceptualize when it comes to changing the way they look, because I think that is part of the equation, but it's not everything, as you and I both know. But let's take a step back here and validate me or disagree in the sense that, like, yeah, weight loss is usually part of the conversation for a lot of people around New Year's resolutions, and why that can be a good idea. But again, are there other options that we're weighing that could be beneficial and do things differently this time going into the new year? Because I think that's what people need to kind of like have that conversation with themselves or with a coach or hear us talk about that for them to actually think about that and then make a change, you know, that's in alignment with what they're actually willing to give. So tell me about your experience with that and we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I've shared in the past that seemed to get a lot of appreciation was, and it's not just like this isn't some kind of thought that I've had and nobody else has ever considered. You know, a lot of other coaches out there have put out sentiments along this line, but it's, you know, if you had your goal body, envision your goal body. If you had that, you wouldn't give a shit what weight you were. You wouldn't give a shit what numbers on the scale, and so. You know, the idea that the smallest version of you is actually going to be the one that you are most happy with, I challenge that. And I'm not saying it's like never going to be accurate. I'm never going to be able to decide what somebody's goals are or what somebody really truly wants. But I think the, I hesitate to say problem, but I'm going to use it here. I think the problem with kind of just the media right now and the messaging around bodies is that weight loss should be a goal for you. And it's not, I mean, again, I think in our, like you said earlier, like we are almost in an echo chamber in the sense that like, yeah, a lot of us are saying similar things and we are agreeing with what each other is saying. And I guess in our echo chamber, like, yes, body recomposition is spoken about a lot, but I think as soon as we take one step out of that, I think it's frequently like, oh, I'm doing Pilates to burn extra calories. I'm going to my group spin classes to burn extra calories. Oh, I'm going to choose this meal to, you know, consume less calories. And to, you know, on one end, I'm happy people are talking about calories and protein more. But I still think we have a ways to go in terms of changing the perception of progress. And when it comes to seeing, you know, when we look at progress in terms of body composition, holy shit, it is muddy. I mean, it's just muddy. And it takes so much time to get rid of that mud, to gain a little bit of clarity. Like, how can you tell somebody, hey, if you eat at maintenance calories, give or take, and you live for the next year, I can almost promise that you will look drastically different. You will feel drastically different. But week to week, you're not going to see any changes. Like, yeah, you might get a little bit stronger, but week to week, like, you're going to be making these deposits, these investments in your long-term self. You're not going to know if it's working or not. It's like putting money. It's like if you're betting on a company or, you know, a dividend or, you know, not a dividend, but an ETF or some shit, right? And you are putting money into that and you have no idea how it's going, but you're putting in $100 every single week into this thing. And you're like, holy shit, I hope this works out. I'm not sure if it will or not because you don't know until you kind of get down the road a little bit. And as these changes are happening, if you are not looking at measurements or progress pictures, which let's be honest, outside of our space, how many people are taking measurements and progress pictures? Not very many. Maybe they're looking at old photos of them when they were at the beach or, you know, at the pool or whatever, even just in a dress or a t-shirt and slacks, whatever. But like people aren't taking these lined up progress photos and measurements. And so telling somebody like, you know, weight loss, it's just so easy to visualize and to see change. You drop half pound, a pound a week, like, oh my God, I am heading in the right direction. Clearly something is working. But at maintenance, what's happening? Muscle growth is the slowest shit possible. You might as well just watch paint dry or grass grow, right? So it's like, you know, I think it's trying to get comfortable with zooming in. You know, I know we often say we have to zoom out, like whether it's looking at investments, whether it's looking at our weight change, whether it's looking at our strength over time, whether it's looking at our mental health, you know, our progress in different ways, our career, we have to zoom out and look at the long run, not these day-to-day, you know, kind of fluctuations. But I think it's hard to zoom out even more in terms of maintenance because you have to look on a 3, 6, 12 month time span to see is this even working? And you just need to trust in the process. So I do think that it's a tough mental spot to be in, you know, it's and it's hard trying to get people and especially clients excited about maintenance. You know, it's like, okay, here are the things we're going to be looking at. And it's not your weight in any conceivable way. Like it's not, that's not how we're going to be looking at progress at least. And so that can be a little bit tough.
Agree, dude. I agree. Like you use the word muddied. Like I literally wrote down here a lot of shit has muddied the water for a lot of people because it's hard to direct your attention and to be able to differentiate like what's most important to you or what's most pertinent to your life or what's the route that you should be taking. Because it's really difficult to arrive on that decision on your own for a lot of people. And it's not saying that you have to, hire a coach in all contexts, but that's the benefit of hiring a coach is like, they're going to give you honesty. They're going to give you kind of the roadmap. They're
Objectiveness.
going to, they're going to be the person that's going to tell you what you need to hear instead of you following accounts on social media that are telling you what you think you want to hear. And I think this time of the year, it's extremely difficult because there is a lot of marketing campaigns. There's a lot of companies. There's a lot of pages. There's a lot of health influencers. Like, what's the sell right now? It's like New Year's is coming up. Weight loss is a goal. This is probably something you want. A lot of people maybe look like, the end result of what people might be aspiring to be, and they have that comparison of like, oh, if I just do what they do, maybe that's going to get me to where I want to be. And quite frankly, man, there's just a lack of transparency that goes alongside that from the content creator standpoint, from the magazine developer, from the news articles, from whatever it is, in so many different ways that it's harder than ever, in my opinion, to be a consumer in the nutrition space on social media or surrounded by friends or in an office setting where there's just so much information and so many inputs that it's like, no fucking shit, you always want to lose weight because that's what everyone else around you is doing. And that's what your favorite influencer is doing, or that's what these people are talking about on the podcast you're always listening to. And it's almost like the lack of conversations that come outside of that that make it difficult for people to actually weigh their options and weigh their decisions of like what might be more appropriate for them. Because you bring up the word maintenance, which essentially is right for people who aren't tracking calories. Like, are we eating enough to support what our body weighs right now? Not gaining, not losing. Like, we're kind of maintaining where we're at. And obviously how you get to your maintenance calories is very different. You mentioned macros earlier, but like, how much protein are you eating?
Oh,
Some people
how
track
many people are
macros.
tracking or should be
Oh,
tracking? Like
exactly.
a fraction, a small amount of people.
Honestly, a lot of people maybe listen to this podcast are like the small percentage of people who do or who do
Right.
fuck about that. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
that's the hard part is like we have these conversations. They help those people as well still. But a lot of people can nod along with this conversation that we're having because they've done that work. But it's how do we reach the other people, or how do we expose people to different alternatives and to talk about things? And that's where you do a good job. That's where I try and, come in and make content around this stuff. Like, that's where it's like exposing people to different viewpoints and different, paths that they can take that I think is started the conversation for a lot of people, but that's not even happening. Like, there's no start of any conversations. It's like, this is what you want, and this is the decision that's been made for you, or what you've been, kind of like taught to believe or taught to want through the last decade of your life. And it's something that keeps people stuck, in and around the new year every single year. And they end up in December in the same spot they were the year before, if not 2 to 5 pounds more than where they were when they were, January 2024, whatever year it was. So it's frustrating. And I empathize with the people who have those shared experiences, because it can be frustrating. But I just want people to know that it doesn't always have to be that way either.
Yeah, I do, I think yo-yo dieting is I mean, obviously it's an issue, right? A lot of people go through these, not just like, and not the intentional like bulk and cut cycles, which, I've been asked because I do a lot of bulk and cut cycles. I've been doing it for like 4 years now, just bulking, cutting over and over and over again. And somebody asked me like, what's the difference between this and yo-yo dieting? And I was like, that's a damn fair point. That's a really damn fair point. And I think the main thing is intentionality. And, if you are not being intentional with weight gain and weight loss, that's where it can spin into yo-yo dieting. And I think the other part of that is like when you are being excessively restrictive in a way that, I never want to say that calorie deficits should be sustainable forever, because obviously we're not going to lose weight forever. But like, let's say somebody needs to lose like or wants to lose 20, 30, 40 pounds. The calorie target they may shoot for as their calorie deficit, that may become their new maintenance. So that may have to be sustainable. If they need to lose, if they, let's say just random ballpark 2000 calories, right now maybe they're maintaining at 2500, they bring it down to 2000. With metabolic adaptation, like with the decrease in energy expenditure as they lose weight, like 2000 might be their new maintenance. And so, okay, and from that perspective, it may have to be sustainable. But what I see as potentially problematic is when somebody does something that's like, there's no conceivable way that this even has the closest resemblance of your normal dietary patterns, that is when we come back to an issue, because it's like if you are using this as a temporary, situation, I just think like we should probably be trying to make your diet primarily health promoting in terms of a lot of nutrient dense foods, but then it should also have some of the foods that you enjoy. And maybe you do have to reduce the portion size of some of those foods that you enjoy a little bit more. Pizza, cheesecake, whatever else, wings, I don't know, whoever knows, whatever, burgers, whatever people are eating. If we need to reduce the portion sizes of those things, that's absolutely okay. But I think as soon as you get into this down the rabbit hole of like, I'm cutting out all these foods, I'm cutting out an entire macronutrient, entire food groups, that's when it's like, I think your likelihood to rebound starts to creep up. And if I'm being honest, like, probably shoot up, probably skyrocket up. But I'm being kind of conservative here and just saying like, it'll creep up a little bit. And so I think that can be an issue. And I also think like, going back to the whole like weight loss, New Year's, I'm fully supportive of weight loss and all that, but I do think that if you've tried weight loss for 5, 10, 15 years or multiple tries, what if you just tried something new? What if you just tried eating closer to maintenance, just tried looking at your hunger and satiety cues a little bit more, tried leaning into more of the high volume foods, the nutrient dense foods, tried lifting? Because I think one of the issues with weight loss, is it does put us into a scarcity mindset. When everything centers around being less and being smaller, I think people can start to feel deprived. And instead, if it's like, I think we can reach an abundance mindset. I know these are kind of like sort of woo-woo words and stuff like that, but I do think it matters. I think we can reach an abundance mindset by saying like, oh, I'm going to fuel myself correctly. I'm going to lean into some of these more nutrient dense foods. I'm going to focus on lifting so I can get stronger and gain muscle and be faster and jump higher or whatever the fuck your goals are. I think that's a potentially more psychologically sustainable perspective to have. And that's really what matters, instead of less calories, more high volume foods, more fiber, more protein, changing the language around cheat meals and cheat days to something like planned indulgence, and reframing obstacles as opportunities instead of saying something like, every week, every Saturday, oh, my wife or my husband or my friends, they want to go out and we get drinks and we get wings and we get burgers and nachos. And it's like, okay, instead of seeing that as this insurmountable obstacle, what can you do to prep for that? Okay, maybe this is the time, like for Christmas, or the holidays in general, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever we celebrate, or just, being around more people during the holiday season. It's how can we prepare for these things? See it as an opportunity to improve, see it as an obstacle we can, work around. And maybe we do move more toward that maintenance, at least for the coming months. Maybe it's not a forever thing, but maybe you try it out for a little while, because otherwise, what happens? You restrict yourself and then you gain 5 or 10 pounds on the other hand, on the other end, because you felt so, restricted. I don't know. I think a lot of people just need to give themselves a fucking break.
Agreed, man. Agreed. And I think everything you just said is so spot on. And I think it highlights this idea that it goes beyond the what people need to be doing, right? Like the what calories or what steps or what training regimen or what is my fiber goal for the day? Like the what questions that, quite frankly, a lot of people can find from
On the
anybody
internet.
on their own, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But a lot of it's like, it's the how questions, right? Or the why questions that I think it's like a missed opportunity for people that people don't ask. Like I do a Q&A every single week. I've done it for the last 2, 3 years of my life. The amount of questions that I get are like, what should I be doing? What is a good step count? What is the best hydration number or, fluid ounce I need to be shooting for each day? And like, I think that can all be helpful. And I think that's part of the discussion, but people don't even ask the how questions. Like, how do I navigate my Christmas party this next week when, it's usually a fuck show and everyone gets lit all the time when I'm there, right? And it's like, how can I start to go into the new year building and in trying to meal prep or go grocery shopping or do things differently than what I've been doing, right? And you know, even taking that a step further, we talk about woo-woo stuff, but like asking the why questions, like why do I want X, Y, and Z? And but chances are, if you do that, like you'll get a lot more clarity, you know, at the end of that than not doing it at all. But everything I just, you know, heard you say and things that I reiterated, it's like, hey, there's tactical things that people need to learn and understand. But I love that you mentioned like the reframing of it, that the conversations that you have around why you're doing some of these things. I had Jared Hamilton on the show a while ago, and we talked about dieting from the inside out, because that's kind of his whole shtick is like, hey, we got to take care of the mental piece. And I think so many people overlook that. And unfortunately, when people jump into fat loss, weight loss, and that's their main goal come the new year, all of these thoughts, these behaviors, these like emotions, like it's almost reinforced for people. Like food rules exist even more. People making decisions based out of like shame and fear is even more real, right? Like all of these things that people have been struggling with that have likely gotten them to a place where sustainability or, you know, the things that they've changed, like haven't been able to stick. Like it's almost like reinforced or pushed to the side because we think that changing the external is always going to be the answer to that, when it's more of an internal problem that we need to fix and address here. But they both go together. It's like, what's the conversations, what's going on in the inside versus what's going on and what's changing on the outside. And that's the unique thing here. And when we talk about maintenance, when we talk about like body recomposition, it's like you mentioned, like what are the pros of being at maintenance? Like, you know, it's not as sexy of a sell for people as weight loss, where
No.
you're objectively seeing the scale go down, and you're fitting in clothes
Right.
differently. And I think if people actually sat here and looked at like a pros and cons list of like, hey, pros of being in a fat loss phase, and like, you know, what are the pros and what are the cons? Like the cons are a fucking mile long if we're
They're
real, and the
long.
pros are like, yeah, we're weighing less, you know, or we're
Fat
seeing,
loss.
yeah, fat loss change. But if we look at maintenance, man, it's the opposite. It's like maintenance, the pros are a mile long. What are the cons? The only con is like you're not losing weight, which for some people might actually be a benefit and helpful in certain contexts. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, how can we get people to like conceptualize that there are different options out there? And I think body recomposition kind of like helps put a label on something that might sound more appealing than saying nothing's happening at all. Because I think that's the hard part when they don't see the scale changes. They don't think anything's happening when there's a lot of meaningful stuff happening under the hood as well. So I, if you can, I'm not ta asking for like a, you know, Merriam-Webster fucking definition here, but what is body recomposition to you? What does that mean for somebody who's like, holy shit, maybe weight loss is the only option here? What's body recomposition? Like, how would you sit here and maybe sell that to them? Not that we're selling anything to people, but like, how would you make them have a more informed decision around what other options there are? Because body recomposition is something that is a viable option for everybody, for being real.
So I think I would, first, it's like body recomposition is, I think a lot of people these days use it as the simultaneous gaining of muscle and losing of body fat, and I see it a little bit broader. I'm going to use that definition because I think that's the definition most people work with. I see it a bit broader as a change in your composition, and that could happen. I mean, that happens whether we gain fat, lose fat, gain muscle, lose muscle, that we are changing. We are making a recomposition of our body with that. But the almost agreed upon in the lifting and nutrition space is the simultaneous gaining of muscle and losing of body fat. And so I think being in that spot, really how we make that happen from a high level view is we eat close-ish to maintenance, a little bit above, a little bit below. It's all going to be relatively similar, and then we just we try to eat nutrient dense foods, obviously for health purposes, but we lift weights. I mean, that's really the stimulus, that's really the driver for muscle growth, and so we need to be doing that. Because if we're just maintaining, like, let's say I'm a 40-year-old man or woman, and I am okay, I'm going to try body recomposition, and I'm eating at maintenance and I'm not lifting. I mean, shit's not happening. You know what I mean? Like, nothing is really going to change. There's no stimulus for our muscle to grow. So it really the most important thing here is that we do add weightlifting into that. And so I guess that would be my definition for it. I guess the cells on it, Being in a being in a phallus phase, it's like everything you said. It's you're gonna see the scale movement, and that can be really rewarding. You're going to be able to see changes in your body, like visual changes in your body will happen over the time course of maybe not 2 weeks, maybe not 3 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, but 4, 5, 6 weeks. And then you start zooming out a little bit more, 8, 12 weeks, you will see changes if you're not going like at an absolute snail's pace. And so that can be exciting. But those changes are happening in a different way, just as fast. I'm gonna slow myself down just as fast at maintenance or body recomp, but at maintenance we do see faster muscle growth. That is absolutely unequivocally true. If we the further we are in a deficit, the slower muscle grows, and the closer we are to maintenance or maybe even a slight surplus, the faster muscle grows. Now obviously there's the trade-off on that spectrum. In addition to muscle growth also comes the fat loss. The further we are in a deficit, to a point, the faster fat loss happens. And then the closer we are to maintenance or even a surplus, fat loss either A is not going to happen in a surplus, or B is going to happen so ungodly slow at maintenance. I mean, if we are maintaining, let's say 160 pounds, we're lifting weights, eating at roughly maintenance calories, we gain 5 pounds of muscle, but we stay 160. What happens? We must have had to lose 5 pounds of fat in that time. Now, what's a realistic rate of muscle growth for people to try to wrap their heads around? That depends on the person, their genetics, how long they've been lifting, how close, like what's their training program look like, their volume, their intensity. And so that's where it can really differentiate. But I know people love numbers. So if you're brand new to training, man, if you could gain 1 pound of muscle a month, you'd be in a good spot. And that's potentially realistic. And then as you get further into training, dude, if I could gain 1 pound of muscle a month at this point in my life, I would be over the moon happy. It's probably very unrealistic for me to go that fast at this point, but I never put numbers on it when I first started lifting. But even just looking back at my photos, it's like, holy man, it's like I probably put on 15 pounds of muscle that first year, maybe more, 20 pounds of muscle potentially, just from lifting and eating like decent amount of calories. I wasn't in this massive surplus. I was probably ballpark right around maintenance, but the changes that can happen in your body are exciting. And then you also start building the patterns, the habits that you're probably, we want to live at maintenance for the most part. We don't always want to be gaining and losing the same 5, 10 pounds. We probably want to live our life at maintenance. And so, the upside to body recomp or maintenance, this pursuit of that is you're building habits that will stick with you forever, and you do get to appreciate that abundance mentality of like, oh, I'm not always trying to fight against the scale, fight against my hunger. I get to push my body forward in a way that feels conducive to me, in a way that doesn't make me feel restricted. So yeah, I mean, less hunger, more energy, probably better sleep, faster muscle growth. There's a lot of upsides to body recomp or maintenance. I think it's the right pursuit for a hell of a lot of people, but again, people's I struggle between telling people what they want and what they need versus they need to have the sense of agency to make the decisions that they want to make for themselves. But I do agree with what you said. It's like if people actually saw the pros cons list just laid out in front of them, okay, let me first say that like people are so hard on themselves. We're going a little bit philosophical here, but like people are so hard on themselves. And I often tell people, how would you treat your best friend? If your best friend was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this fitness thing. Here's a pros cons list of this. We didn't put fat loss or maintenance or body recomp labels on it, but here's a pros and cons list of this venture, and here's a pros and cons of this venture. Your best friend would be like, what the fuck? Go that way. Are you kidding me? Go that way. What are you doing? But it's we are so hard on ourselves that we punish ourselves, and we make ourselves feel guilty for missing a workout, overeating on one meal. And it's just these I think everybody in the world needs a therapist. I think that should be assigned from basically the second you're like 14 years old, 13 years old, and I think everybody should be government mandated therapist. I'm not big on government overreach or shit like that, but like I think that's one thing I believe in.
Totally, bro. You're preaching to the choir here. I've probably talked about therapy, 80% of the episodes that I've ever recorded. So it's definitely something that, my audience is appreciative of and knows my stance on. So I do agree that, again, circling back to like, yeah, there's like an emotional, like a philosophical, there's like a mental health piece of this component just as much as there is like an actual objective physical transformation. You know, what are the numbers? What are the tactical things that we're doing to accomplish this stuff? But I think that was all really well pointed out and said. And I think somebody listening to that can start to see that there are a pros to being at maintenance, right? And taking a step back, ironically, like when somebody goes from doing nothing at all and doesn't know what they're eating and is kind of doing all the things, and then they go into New Year's and you go to maintenance, like ironically, that's probably a deficit for some people, you
It's
know? Or
probably
like,
that it's
you know,
yeah.
there's some benefits that come from just being at maintenance from a weight loss standpoint that people can see without even intentionally trying to lose weight.
Yep.
And I think if you look at some of these different options, you know, we brought up muscle a ton, and I've talked about muscle a thousand times in the podcast as well. But man, like this whole conversation around like body recomposition is centered around also maintaining or building more muscle mass than where you have right now. And just a recap of why that's important is because from a vanity-driven standpoint, your dream body or where you want to be probably has more muscle. From an independence, from a longevity standpoint, your body needs more muscle. It's not getting any easier the older we get. And not to mention metabolically, you know, all the other things, like even things that weightlifting trains us, like psychologically, there's a lot of benefits that come from weightlifting and getting stronger and putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. So this pursuit of building muscle, this pursuit of lifting and resistance training is such an important part of this whole body recomposition process. 'Cause like you alluded to, if that's not there, if that doesn't exist, like you can't eat at maintenance and expect your body to change, right? So
Yeah,
that
right.
has to be the focal point as well, just as much, if not, you know, more than the actual diet itself. So I think all of these things being said, it's like body recomposition is a viable option, I would argue, for everybody at some point. And also, you mentioned this whole idea of like learning how to live at maintenance or understanding what maintenance is. And it's not to say that somebody has to meticulously track food the rest of their life to be able to live at maintenance and see those results. But like you doing that for a period of time, or you understanding the whole energy balance equation and you understanding like how much you could and should be eating to see results, like that is stuff that nobody learns that is likely something that is keeping you from getting to where you want to be and staying there long term. My last episode I recorded was like, what are habits and traits of people who maintain their weight loss long term? Because if we're being real, it's like the diet phase is very, very small equation of
It's a
this. Like
blip. Yeah.
the weight loss retention statistics that we have are so trash, right? And it's not because people have a hard time losing weight. People can lose weight. It's very objectively speaking to everyone, it's like it can be very easy for a lot of people, but it's the keeping it off is the hard part. And like body recomposition, eating at maintenance, training hard, like that's how you actually learn to do this shit forever. And that's how you build this new identity to actually keep that progress going forward. And you know, you just trying to hit an arbitrary weight loss goal and then not knowing like what it takes to get there or willing to do what it takes to stay there. It's like that's how you see people regain and lose the weight multiple years after year after year. So well said,
I
but I think.
love, I want to touch on that actually that you mentioned there, and it's creating the self that you want to. And I wrote down when I was writing down notes for this episode, I wrote down some stuff that I had done in the past. On Are you familiar with Eric Trexler of formerly of Stronger Best Science? Yeah, okay. So when he was with Stronger Best Science, he wrote this article on a goal hierarchy, and it was just, I just thought it was absolutely incredible. If you're listening, I think you should, I mean, if you're at all curious about what I'm about to say, I think you should Google goal hierarchy, Eric Trexler, goal hierarchy, Stronger Best Science. It was absolutely phenomenal. And basically he laid out, and you know, as I kind of went into the weeds on this and started writing about this on my own for my own clients, you know, wanting to educate them about it, I dug into the research that he was sharing about goal hierarchies and about, you know, at the top end, we have the superordinate goal. And it's basically like, who do you want to become? What are the traits of the person that you want to become? And then if we move down one, you know, bracket of that hierarchy, we look at intermediate goals. Okay, what kinds of things do we need to do, you know, in order to reach that different self, that new version of you that you want to achieve? And so this might be things like lift weights, and it should be relatively arbitrary. It should be like lift weights, exercise more, eat healthy, you know, eat a health promoting diet. And they should be kind of almost gray, but they lead in, they build back up. And then below that, you have your subordinate goals. And these are like the habits, the processes. And I think that's where you can really, I mean, you can tailor these habits and processes so much clearer at maintenance than you can when you're in a deficit, because those habits and processes, oops, sorry, hopefully I didn't make a loud noise. Those habits and processes look so drastically different when you're in a deficit versus when you are at maintenance. Some of them, there may be overlap, you know, getting 6, 8, 10,000 steps a day. 10,000 could be overkill, you know, but if you're doing it, great. But like, you know, getting enough steps, eating some fruits and veggies every day, eating, you know, X amount of grams of protein, or just eyeballing, you know, trying to get enough protein in per day. And so that's where I think you can really clue in, and you can really, like you said in your, you know, the topic that you did in your last episode, it's like focusing on those behaviors, those processes, they do build up to this, you know, this new version of yourself. And so I think a goal hierarchy is actually a really powerful thing. And as we're, you know, it's very conducive to this time of the year, as you think about who you want to become and who you want to move toward in 2025. You know, we're about to hit this giant temporal event, you know, the first of the year. I mean, how many times, you know, every year it's people are new year, new me. And I think this is a great opportunity. You know, there are some, I don't want to bash other coaches or anything like that because they have their own perspectives. But I, and so this isn't me trying to bash on anybody, but there are other people in any industry that say, like, oh, you know, why wait till January? And that's an absolutely valid thing to say. Absolutely valid thing to say. You can absolutely make action on it Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning. Who cares? It doesn't have to be. But if using January 1st as a spark for you to make a change is what works for you, I love that. That's phenomenal. You know, there's no right or wrong way to do fitness. There's no right or wrong. There are principles, you know, that we have to abide by. But outside of those principles, there's a lot of flexibility in the routes that somebody can take for them to be successful. And the routes that somebody takes are going to be very individualized to that person.
Well said, dude. Well said. And I'll try and link that Eric Drexler, goal hierarchy in the show notes as well, because I think that's super valuable. And again, it's part of, if not one of the more important parts of this discussion, because when we look at even body recomposition, it's like, what are the habits, behaviors? It's like, yeah, you alluded to getting more steps, training, not to mention like the bar that we're setting is not crazy high. We're not saying lift 5 days a week, right?
Right.
You know, 2 to 3 days a week could be life changing for people if they're not doing anything
Absolutely.
at all. You know, 3 to 4 days a week will ch absolutely change your life, independent of anything else, quite frankly.
Yeah.
That the diet, the, whether you track calories or you want to track all your macros or you just track fiber consumption or, you just track your weights and, you implement some of these, habits and behaviors around nutrition. Like there's a lot of things that you need to come to the realization, the acceptance of that, hey, these are the things I'm going to need to do to get to where I want to be. And when you do that, the shit becomes a lot easier, right? And it becomes more enjoyable and exciting to hear about, oh, there's something called body recomposition where I don't have to lose weight to get to where I want to be. And that's not the thing that I have to do. Because, when it comes to body recomposition, it's like, people might be more excited to hear about how that works and why that works. And for somebody asking that question, there's something called nutrient partitioning, which we can kind of talk about super quickly. But it's like, how does body recomposition work? It's like your body will basically use the body fat stores that you have to fuel the process of muscle protein synthesis. So basically, the stronger the signal that you have, your body has to grow muscle, the more it will use its own body fats to fuel, the body recomposition changes that we're talking about. When we say body recomposition, we're essentially saying like, hey, lowering your body fat percentage and increasing your lean muscle mass or increasing your lean body fat percentage, right? Now, who are the people who are more likely to benefit from this or who have a better chance of experiencing this? It's like the kind of person who has a really strong training stimulus, who's lifting, right? That's a signal. The people who are eating enough protein, another signal. The people who are, yeah, again, just like training really hard and who are very sensitive to that training stimulus, which for a lot of people, newbies, people coming off an injury, performance enhancing drugs, right? If you're taking anabolics and things that can kind of fuel that process even more. But, having the training, having the nutrition, eating enough protein, like you're going to get a lot of the results and benefits from body recomposition without going into a deficit. Now, the cool part is people who do go into a deficit, they can see body recomposition too, right? Like it is possible for people who are in a deficit, but when it comes to training age, when it comes to people doing this for a period of time, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about. If you have 5-ish minutes, 10 minutes
Oh,
here,
yeah.
because I wanted to get your perspective on this, where it's like, okay, we know body recomposition is cool, nutrient partitioning is cool. Like there's these mechanisms that happen and it's possible and I don't have to lose weight. People are like, great, 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 great. What is the time frame that we would recommend, you would recommend to somebody to commit to something like this, right? And this might be kind of scary or exciting, depending on how, what the numbers are. I heard you say, 6 months to a year, but like, tell me what you think of when you think of body recomposition and somebody who's intentionally going to try and eat at maintenance and lift really hard. Like, what is a minimum amount of time that you would recommend for somebody to do that before they change things up? And I'll ask a follow-up question about people who are a little bit more advanced, people who have been training like yourself or myself for 4, 5, 6 plus years, really smart, intelligently. Like, how does that change as well? But let's start with the first question of like, how long would you recommend somebody to give this a shot before they start to think about maybe I need to go into a deficit and actually speed this up? Or maybe I'm obsessed with building muscle, but I'm not building muscle fast enough. Like maybe going into a surplus might be more applicable to them. But what would be kind of like a recommendation starting point if somebody's like, hey, I'm going to do some quote unquote body recomp this January and I'm going to commit to that in 2025 and see where it takes me? Like, what would be your suggestion to them?
And I would say, like, these are kind of arbitrary numbers, but I'm gonna say like 3 to 6 months, and I'm gonna put a big asterisk on this. And the reason for that asterisk is, like, after like 3 months, man, you should probably see if your lifts aren't increasing, no matter what, unless you're in this massive deficit and you're already pretty lean. Like, okay, then yeah, are we gonna be gaining muscle? Probably not. Are we gonna be gaining strength? Maybe. Because there's many factors that go into strength besides just muscle size. Maybe you're just getting better at that movement. Maybe you're just being able to express that strength a little bit better. But for the most of the people who are just looking at maintenance, like, we should probably see strength increasing. We should probably see like some bit of measurements changing. Maybe that's around the waist. Maybe that's around your waist shrinking, your arms growing. It's something like that. So I think 3 to 6 months would be a pretty good, tell of that. Now, I see body recomposition maybe slightly differently than some other people, and I know, I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier in the podcast, but I'm still going to go within the context of gaining muscle and losing body fat at the same time. And I'm going to say that, like, my perspective on body recomposition is more of like almost like a very like maintenance to a very small deficit. I like giving clients room to wiggle, on the days that they want a little more calories. Go nuts. Like, here's your maintenance roughly. Please feel free to eat a little bit higher. And on the days where you are like, eh, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty full. I'm not very hungry. I feel energetic. Feel free to bring the calories down. And there was a meta-analysis by Murphy and colleagues. And I'm reading this. I don't just have this like off the top of my head, although I do know, whatever. But on average, and please, 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 listener, please know that I'm saying on average, and there's a lot of nuance to this. But on average, a 500 calorie deficit fully blunted lean mass gains. Now, this is a meta-analysis. So it's looking at a lot of studies, looking at the averages, and every study is looking at the average of every person that they studied. And so who could potentially gain muscle in a bigger than a 500 calorie deficit? People who have excess adiposity, people who, are living with overweight or obesity. Those people, they can probably move into a greater deficit and still see muscle gains. And people who are very lean, like, let's say you're like, even if you don't know your body fat percentage, let's say you have like defined six pack. Are you going to be able to be in like a 400 calorie deficit and still make lean mass gains when you're 10 years down the road trained? I don't know. I don't know for sure, and I think it'd be very bold of me to confidently say yes or no, because we just don't know what that person's training stimulus looks like. We don't know their protein intake. There's a lot to go into that. But I will say that, like, if you wanted to, like, let's say you wanted to lose a bit of body fat, if we're somewhere in between maintenance or deficit and you're having trouble deciding, maybe you just split the difference and go somewhere in the middle, which technically is still a deficit, right? Like, for all intents and purposes, it is a deficit, but it's just a little bit slower of a deficit. So you're still gonna see that change in the scale slowly, quarter pound, half pound per week, probably. But you're going to be able to see muscle growth faster than you would if you were in a 500, 600, 700 plus calorie deficit. And so that could be, a viable approach for a lot of people as well. It's just a smaller deficit.
Totally, dude. Yeah, I mean, we could talk about this for an hour, like the spectrum of
Yeah.
people who
Oh,
might
yeah.
exist, on this like line of, who can accomplish recomp and who might be a better fit with or what kind of results you might see. But Dude, I couldn't agree more. And I think we have to acknowledge this idea that maintenance is a range and it's going to fluctuate and it's going to change in response to, you know, if you gain a little bit of weight or lose a little bit of weight. Because all of these things, like even though technically you're eating around how much it takes for your body to maintain, build some muscle without gaining a substantial amount of weight, like you're actually in a surplus, like your body's going to fluctuate 5 pounds, you know,
Oh,
like
yeah.
it's going to change, but it's going to look vastly different. And I appreciate your perspective on that, 'cause that was something that I was going to say too, where it's like, yeah, maybe the newer person, the person that hasn't turned up the knobs, so to speak, on all these things, like you're probably going to see pretty cool and pretty quick progress
Oh, yeah.
compared to somebody like Alex right now, who is 5+ years in, and like you being at maintenance, like you're not going to maintenance in your season of life for building muscle. You know what I mean? It's like you're
Right.
going because you just had a kid and you want your flexibility higher and you want to just enjoy the body that you're in. And you realize that maybe vanity isn't the most important thing. And not to say that you can't have, you know, vanity driven goals. Like I even saw you just went through your own fat loss or are going through it right now. And I think it's just an acknowledgement that like, hey, there's tools that we can use depending on your current season of life and how old you are from a training age standpoint that might be better or less advantageous depending on what is most important to you. But body recomposition, maintenance calories, to me is like the stopping ground. It's the middle point. It's
Oh, yeah.
the thing that people come back to, and we have to learn how to live in that space because that's likely going to be the space that you live in indefinitely, you know? So for me personally, I've seen so many, just a huge spectrum of like recomposition in clients over the last 5 years or so. Like I've seen people who have been in that 3 to 4 year training mark, and you know, they just dial things in a little bit more. Maybe they get on a good training program, or maybe they start doing lengthened partials or whatever it is. You know, but they start training differently, and you know, maybe they weren't training as hard as they were on their own, and they get a coach, and like that is the thing that helped them have these amazing body recomposition. And I've also seen people who, you know, 6 months, I trust them. We look at the data, they've been training hard, we watch form videos, like maybe they don't see that many changes, you know, and that to me makes sense, right? Like just the heterogeneity of muscle growth for people, like on a genetic level, it's going to be so different for everybody,
Oh, yeah.
but you have to experiment with it. Like you can't just be this person like you maybe were at one point in your life where it's like, I'm a hard gainer, I'm never going to gain weight, and there's nothing I can do about it. You know, it's like, man, give yourself, you said 3 months. I think that 3 to 9 month, that range is
Yeah, oh,
a
yeah.
starting point if you've never done that before. And chances are a lot of people have room for improvement because we're not talking to people who have been in the bodybuilding sh com you know, community for the
Right.
last 10 years of their life. We're talking to the people who, again, are setting a New Year's resolution and trying to lose weight this year. Like that is the perfect person that could benefit from this the most, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know that, you know, you had mentioned that you wanted to, and we kind of touched on this about like who can recomp at a higher rate or, you know, at a slower rate. And so like, you know, like you said, it's as your training age advances, like the likelihood of you gaining muscle and losing body fat simultaneously, at least I'm not going to say that I challenge against people who say the likelihood goes down. I challenge against the rate slows down. The you know, and that's just the reality of it is the longer you lift, if you've been lifting intelligently, like yeah, can you change, can you move the dials up? Can you get a better training program? Can you get more volume? Can you go with a higher intensity? Absolutely. But the rate is going to slow down. All those things equal, the rate of muscle growth will slow down as you train for longer. I mean, that's just a, that's an undeniable fact. But you know, there is research that by Bearcat and colleagues, I hope I'm saying his name right, that I mean, the title of it is actually Body Recomposition: Can Trained Individuals Build Muscle and Lose Body Fat at the Same Time? And it's yeah, absolutely. And rate does go down, but even as you're advanced 5, 10 years into lifting, can you gain muscle at maintenance? Absolutely. Now, I'm a bit hypocritical, you know, because I'm currently doing bulk and cut cycles. I've been doing them for the last 4 years. I did them through all of my wife's pregnancy. You know, I'm cutting right now for like a 6 to 10 week cut just to try to get a little bit leaner because it looks cool. I mean, that's really it. And I will say that, you know, training is still about vanity for me, and it basically always will be. And the health benefits, I'm glad that I get them regardless, but it basically always it not basically it always has been about aesthetics for me, and I am pretty sure that it always will be. The other stuff, great, you know, the better blood sugar management, the better mobility, the better strength as I age, that's all fine and dandy. But no, if I didn't like the way that I looked You know, if there wasn't an aesthetic component for me personally, I don't even know if I'd lift at all. I don't even know if and that's been okay with me. And I think other people, you know, I do empathize with other coaches who say you need to train for something more than aesthetics. I understand that philosophy fully because for some people that absolutely matters. But, you know, for me personally, man, it's never been about anything other than aesthetics. It's completely that for me.
Totally. And for someone in your position, you know, like you show me somebody like yourself who says that, and I'll show you somebody who's tracked their
Oh,
food
yeah.
probably for the past 5 years, who has gone into, you know, surpluses and deficits and have has not been super stationary with what they might be doing with their nutrition at all times. And that's your decision. And I think that's something that's amazing. I've been in the
Oh,
same
yeah.
boat, you know, and like I'm also in a boat right now where I've been more flexible. And it's part of the privilege because I've had so much experience and I do this for a living. And
For
I'm
sure.
a little bit more intuitive with some of this stuff than the general person. Like, of course, I acknowledge all of those things. But like for somebody like getting to a place in their life where it's like, yeah, you know what? Like, I look good, you know, for my standards, and I am eating in a way that I enjoy, and I'm doing a training that I like. And this idea that I don't always have to be pursuing something like body recomposition again stands as this kind of goal where it's like that can also reinforce the benefits of you being in a place where you're not constantly trying to lose and gain 10 pounds every single year, you know? So.
And I don't think it's good for everybody to bulk and cut like the same way that I have. I don't think it's necessarily a good idea across the board. And I guess I'll bring up one more study that I didn't have in my notes, but it was the recent Helms study that took place during 2020, where they compared there were three groups, you know, all lifting, and they looked at they tried to separate them into maintenance 5% surplus, and I believe it was 15% surplus, but it kind of washed out and was basically maintenance versus 15% surplus. Only an 8 week study, but muscle growth was pretty similar. And so I think like that should be so comforting for people who are like, yeah, but what if I don't gain muscle as fast at, you know, at maintenance as I do in a surplus? Like it's going to be so damn close. In my, this is my hot take. I'm actually doing a bulking episode, not to plug my own podcast, but I'm doing a bulking episode. And so I'm like really, really fresh on all this, on the research of it right now. And, you know, the difference between maintenance and a surplus is not huge. It's not like this canyon where, like, oh, if you don't go into this 100 calorie surplus, all of a sudden you're not going to get gains that are even remotely the same. Like, the muscle growth is going to be so damn similar. And my kind of hot take is it's less about being in a surplus and more about not being in a deficit. That's kind of my hot take as of right now. And I consider, so I still do a surplus partially because when I get lean, I'm lean enough that my body's probably not using a whole lot of stored body fat because I don't have a whole lot of stored body fat when I get like really lean. So I kind of need to get into a surplus to kind of bump my body fat up a little bit. But then the other side of it is like, yeah, I mean, I'm okay with doing these bulk and cut cycles. I'm okay with getting this marginally, potentially greater, you know, muscle growth rate at the cost of being in a deficit down the road. But I think if you were to take two versions of me from here on out, like let's say 2025, we split me into two people. I do everything the exact same, except one person eats at maintenance, one person eats in a surplus and deficit, and I do these cycles. Are you going to be able to tell a visual difference at the end of 2025? I bet a lot of money, probably not. Like genuinely, I'd bet a lot of money, probably not. I mean, I think it's gonna be damn close.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree, man. Like I'm fairly nihilistic in that sense too, where it's just like all the small nuances or somebody like trying to do this thing because it's going to give you 5% return on more return on your investment or 10% more. It's like for the average person, like that shouldn't be part of the
It's in the
conversation,
weeds.
you know?
No,
And like,
it's too in the weeds.
yeah. And it makes sense for people who do this for a living and who really you're trying to get the nth degree of every amount of progress that they do. Like, again, like that's not what this podcast is for. And I you use the word, I think comforting, but to me, I think it's comforting and it's pretty promising that like, yeah, you know what, like wherever you are on this spectrum of like how close you are to your dream body or how much muscle mass you could have, it's like, depending on where you're at, it's like, you're going to get there eventually if you do
Yep.
shit well. And whether it takes you 5 years or 2.5 years, you know, it might look different depending on the speed and how intentional and how much you can actually give. But at the end of the day, if you commit now and you spend and you think about what the next 5, 10 years are going to look like, chances are somebody that's not Alex in your situation or me in my situation, where I could show you food logs for 5 years and I could show you my training programs and I could talk to you about everything. It's like, man, the person also training 3 days a week who is getting enough protein, who maybe intermittent fast because it fits their preferences, who doesn't have a ton of body fat, you know, like they're going to look very great for their own standards as well, right? Given how
And they're
much
going to gain muscle
protein.
faster than you and me at this point,
No
which is just
question.
like, it's humiliating. It's just sad.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's always
If they are
frustrating.
the average gym goer, they're going to gain muscle faster than you or me at this point, who
No
are trying to
question.
like dial everything in, you know? And it's
Yes.
just like, I'm
It's
happy for them and
me
also
too.
devastated for myself.
Same, bro. Same. And it, like that makes sense. You know, it's like that person might be farther away from what their genetic
Oh, yeah.
capacity for muscle mass development could be, right? Assuming everyone's
Absolutely.
natural here, right? Like that's a big
Right.
caveat here. And
Yeah.
there's not these enhancing benefits you might be getting from pharmaceuticals or other stuff. But like, man, you are going to see progress depending on, you know, where you're at. Might be slower, might be quicker. You know, for us, it's going to be a lot slower compared to where we were 5, 10 years ago. But I just have to say that there's a lot of benefits that come from this, independent of how quickly you gain muscle or how quickly your body changes. It's like the shit that you're doing now, the stuff we do for body recomp is going to be the stuff that your future self thanks you, you know, profusely for 10 years from now, 20 years from now, because you did the work now
Yes.
and you just built that into your system. So couldn't agree more, dude.
Awesome.
Plug your podcast. You've been super generous with your time. We
Oh,
gotta
yeah.
that. We'll save a part two for another time. But tell people where they can find you. I really appreciate this conversation. I think it was really fun. I hope
Yeah.
they can take something from this. It's just knowing that there's an option out there and there's a lot of cool things that can come from trying to, you know, focus your attention to maintenance, you know, and trying to lift hard and trying to do things without always trying to lose weight as your primary focus. Like, quite frankly, that's going to be a side effect of a lot of the things that we talked about today, regardless for a lot of people. But there is a lot of benefits that come from the time spent not in a deficit. And I think that's the point we wanted to drive home today. But tell people where they can listen to your podcast, find you, plug your coaching business, all that good stuff. And we'll leave it from there.
Yeah, well, first let me just say like thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. When you messaged me like, "Hey, I want to, you want to hop on?" I was like, "Absolutely, let's do it." I was really excited. I know to the listener it might sound like Luke and I are best friends, but like we just met each other right before this podcast. So, it was really cool. I'm really really excited and glad and grateful for the chance to meet you and talk to you and to be on your platform. I think that's a really high I just really appreciate that opportunity. So, yeah, you can find me, alextiemie.com. My last name is, I know it's not how it's spelled, but alextiemie.com. You can find how to work with me, one-on-one group stuff, all that, my blog, my podcast. My podcast is, on all the platforms. It's Lowering the Barrier. I do it with my wife and occasionally guests, but I kind of haven't gotten real good at the guest thing. 'Cause, you just want to have a lot of episodes before somebody takes your podcast seriously. So we've been doing just the solo stuff with my wife and I for now. Other than that, you can find me on Instagram, Alex Teamy Fitness, TikTok, same thing. I post more on Instagram, honestly. I'm not, TikTok might be going away. Listeners might be listening. It's like, what's TikTok? I never heard of that. It's like Vine, it disappeared and RIP Vine. I miss that platform is a good platform. But yeah, that's everything. That's where you can find me and that's how you can work with me.
Good, bro. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.